Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about a mixed bag of things. The New York Blood Center is finally doing right by its Liberian chimpanzee colony. We'll talk about the Iditarod sled racing, and the truth about so-called nuisance wildlife. Take it away, Jeannie.
Oh, thank you. The New York Times reported yesterday that 2 years after the New York Blood Center set off a storm of protests from animal advocates when it withdrew support for its colony of chimpanzees in Liberia, the center has now joined with the Humane Society of the United States to guarantee the chimps' future care. In a joint announcement, the two groups said that the Blood Center would donate $3 million to the Humane Society, which will now assume responsibility for the lifetime care of the chimpanzees. These chimps some of them have been in captivity for around 30 years, and in captivity, chimps can live for 50 to 60 years, so we're looking at least at 30 more years of support for these chimps. The $3 million donation amounts to roughly half the estimated cost of caring for the animals on their island sanctuaries, in quotes, in Liberia, said Wayne Pacelli, the head of the Humane Society of the United States. For years, the New York Blood Center used these chimpanzees in medical research, infecting many of them with hepatitis and other types of viruses. After decades of confinement, the chimpanzees do not have the skills to survive in the wild on their own. They are and were completely reliant on humans for survival. But despite previously committing to the lifetime care of these chimpanzees, the New York Blood Center withdrew all funding for their care. Effectively, their economic decision of this company left the chimpanzees to suffer from neglect, dehydration, and starvation. The New York Blood Center, for those who don't know, is a large American organization that provides blood, develops blood-related products, and also conducts medical research. In the 1970s, the Blood Center worked with the Liberian Institute for Biomedical Research to create a lab dedicated to obtaining and breeding chimpanzees for use in medical research. So after using and profiting from these chimps for decades, the Blood Center decided the chimps were no longer needed for future research and, quote, retired them to these small islands near the lab in the middle of a river. The Blood Center publicly proclaimed their commitment to the lifetime care of the chimpanzees, but then walked away from their ethical responsibility when they stopped all funding for the chimpanzees' care.
You know, you see this with various types of organizations and lifetime care, we're going to take care of this forever. It usually kind of equates to until people forget, and then we're going to stop.
Yeah,
it's a large commitment. I mean, how many organizations even are going to be in existence in 30 years? So you have to have that kind of money up front if you're going to do it.
Yeah. So the Blood Center supported the chimps until the spring of 2015, when it just cut off funds. Officials from the Blood Center said that the reason was that negotiations with the Liberian government had not been, quote, productive.
What does that mean? Were they trying to negotiate to not pay for it and have the Liberian government pay for it or something?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The timing of the cutoff, in looking at the timeline, it was in parallel with another major issue in the United States, which was the protection of chimpanzees under the Endangered Species Act, which made it illegal to, quote, take a captive chimpanzee, which includes any action that harms or harasses an individual, such as invasive biomedical research or abusive training techniques in circuses and such. So it also became illegal to sell chimpanzees in the interstate pet trade or to engage in commercial transport of the animals across state lines. This is the power of the Endangered Species Act, right? It's a hammer. It's a hammer on any type of commerce with these animals. So anyway, this action was implemented by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and was apparently taken as a cue by the Blood Center to cut support to its chimp lab in Liberia. To sever any relationship with chimpanzees used for research.
You think that the implication is they just thought that was sort of an easy way out, or were they also looking at, hey, we can't, you know, sell these guys on the side in the future to somebody else if we run out of money?
I'm sure somewhere there's a spreadsheet with these alternative options.
Right.
At the time, Victoria O'Neill, who was a spokeswoman for the Blood Center, said that the organization, quote, never had any obligation to care for the chimps, contractual or otherwise.
This sounds like a Trump campaign promise. never happened. We never said that.
No, we didn't. And, you know, actually one of the CEOs or one of the chief executives was quoted in a scientific journal saying that they would be responsible for the chimps.
Right.
So primatologists and animal advocates understandably reacted with outrage. Dr. Brian Hare, a noted primatologist at Duke University, was quoted at the time as saying, quote, I have studied great apes for 20 years in all contexts across the globe, in labs, in zoos, in sanctuaries, and in the wild. Never, ever have I seen anything remotely as disgusting as this, end quote. And this meaning the conditions of these chimps on these islands. Protests were held at the Blood Center's headquarters in New York City, and by August 2015, HSUS had hired a couple, Jenny and Jim Desmond, who are an American couple with experience in great ape rescue, to oversee the care of the chimps over in Liberia. The HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, then also began a campaign to pressure and cajole the Blood Center to take on some of the financial burden. Wally Baldwin, who served on the board of the Center for the Great Apes at the time, was quoted as saying, quote, when I realized that the New York Blood Center was prepared to let their chimps die of starvation and thirst on deserted islands after holding them captive in cages for 30 years and conducting hundreds of painful experiments on them, I decided to rally caring people around the world to demand accountability and take action. I am gratified that our efforts paid off, end quote.
I mean, that kind of speaks for itself, that quote.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, you know, if a corporation doesn't want to do something, they won't be forced into doing it.
I'd like to put their board members and stockholders on that island.
Yeah. The Humane Society and the Blood Center have been negotiating off and on for the last few years. The Humane Society gained support of some prominent people, such as Bill Richardson, a former governor of New Mexico, to try and talk to the Blood Center behind the scenes. Wayne Pacelli, who's a veteran of these kinds of private negotiations and is also the executive director of the Humane Society of the United States, said that the Blood Center had been incredibly resistant. Right? Normally there's like good negotiations allow a very public entity to have like a backdoor resolution so that both parties can save face.
Right.
But in this case, Blood Center just wasn't having any of it. So for 2 years, these chimps are languishing. The Blood Center was so resistant that when grassroots activists in New York City launched a protest campaign in 2015 that targeted not only the New York Blood Center, but also its top three corporate partners, which were IBM, MetLife, which is an insurance company, and Citigroup, which is the financial company. Those three companies issued public statements severing ties with the New York Blood Center. And still, the Blood Center did not budge.
I don't know if that's an indictment on their profit motivation or in this case sort of lack of it, or on, you know, the sort of the rampant speciesism. You know, you imagine they've been doing these experiments for dozens of years and these are just property to them and disposable lives in some sense that they just didn't care.
Yeah, you know? I think part of it was there was a little factoid that the Blood Center did not consider these chimpanzees their property. They did not consider that they owned these chimpanzees. They cared for them. They built the facility where they were experimented on, but they didn't own them. And I think that was part of what the negotiations were with Liberia
like, going back to that. They were theirs until they weren't theirs.
Yeah. Right. Until it wasn't convenient to be theirs.
Right.
So anyway, as for New York City, I want to give a shout out to an activist on the ground who was strategic and relentless in pushing the Blood Center to do right by the chimpanzees. This was Mr. Donnie Moss, who's a New York City-based animal rights activist who leads a group called Their Turn. Using just a cell phone video, cell phone video and social media, he engaged with people all over the world, but especially in New York City, to put pressure on the Blood Center to support the chimpanzees that it had abandoned. Among other things, Moss is famous for making an award-winning documentary called Blinders that talks about the controversial horse-drawn carriages in New York City. So I saw him speak at a conference last year, and he was like, if I can do this without any video skills, if I can just do this with a cell phone anybody can do it, and we all should be doing it, meaning speaking up for the animals.
Yeah, that's great. So it's inspiring.
Anyway, so the settlement and infusion of cash will allow that couple, Jenny and Jim Desmond, to not only hire back almost all of the Liberians who lost their jobs when the New York Blood Center cut their funding, but also to make dramatic improvements to the care of the chimps, including daily feedings. They were being fed only every other day because you have to take a boat out to these islands to give these chimps their food, and the chimps come out like the saddest little beings ever, begging for food and water.
And even though, you know, it's expensive, you know, and this is also Liberia. It couldn't be that expensive to have fed them more than once a day.
Right, yeah. So anyway, and also the animals will be getting, the chimps will be getting birth control. Because the idea is not to have a breeding colony.
Which, are they just starting that? So they were retiring them to breed indefinitely on unsuitable islands that don't have natural food sources?
So Donnie Moss actually went to Liberia to see firsthand because he wanted to be, you know, a witness. He wanted to be able to speak from the heart. And so he took a lot of pictures and some video. And, yeah, there are actually some from very young chimps. No, I didn't see any infants in his pictures, which were from 2 years ago, but I did see some youngsters. So, yeah, we're looking at 60 years, 50 to 60 years, if these animals stay healthy.
Wow.
So, anyway, that's good news. It's good news.
Yeah, right.
It's just a shame that, you know, a company like this, a big company, can... just pull up stakes and leave these animals behind.
Right. And we've touched before on how, you know, the animal model and the primate model is still not even that useful typically to humans for testing. Even the fact that if this blood company retired, didn't, you know, quote-unquote retired these chimpanzees, that means they realized their own testing was sort of useless and you know, it's just the whole thing was probably... senseless torture.
Yeah. So, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. What do we have up next, Danny?
Wells Fargo has pulled their support from Alaska's Iditarod, or as people like to say, I killed a dog race. The world's most famous sled dog race has lost Wells Fargo, a major backer, and Alaska race officials are blaming animal rights organizations for pressuring corporate sponsors outside the state with so-called manipulative information about the treatment of jobs. I always love how capitalism is totally correct, an awesome way for us all to live when it works out for the oligarchs, and when you use capitalism to affect change, suddenly you're radicals applying pressure incorrectly. So. The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race is an annual long-distance sled dog race run in early March from Settlers Bay to Nome, Alaska. Mushers and a team of 16 dogs, that's a lot of dogs, of which at least five must be on the tow line at the finish line, which, you know, means the other ones are somewhat disposable, cover the distance in 8 to 15 days or more. The Iditarod began in 1973 as an event to test the best sled dog mushers and teams.
So much for tradition, right?
Right. But it evolved, of course, into today's highly competitive race. The race goes on regardless of weather, with teams racing through blizzards, sub-zero temperatures, and gale-force winds, which can cause wind chill to reach negative 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That's cold. The exact measured distance of the race varies year to year due to the weather, but the general length of the race is about 1,000 miles. The first race in the year 1973 was won with a time of 20 days, 0 hours, 49 minutes, and 41 seconds. We're being precise.
Yes.
By 2017, the fastest winning time was 8 days. So we're going from 20 days to 8 days, and you can imagine the toll that takes then on the dogs to accomplish that.
Oh, but what athletes the musher is, right?
Right.
What an athlete that person must be.
Yeah, it's hard work cracking a whip. Wells Fargo spokesman David Kennedy said that the banking institution's investment in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race has declined since 2010. He said he could not discuss specific reasons for the San Francisco-based bank dropping the sponsorship. In a prepared statement, Kennedy wrote that Wells Fargo regularly reviews where we allocate our marketing resources to build and enhance relationships with customers and the broader community. As a part of this process, we have decided not to sponsor the Iditarod in 2018. What that means is public pressure worked. So, and that's but they'll never admit that it did. PETA, or the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, lauded the decision. The organization has been a longtime critic of the race and said it alerted the bank that five dogs connected to this year's race had died. The deaths bring the total dog deaths to more than 150 in Iditarod's history. So how many years had this been going on?
Since 73.
73. I'm not going to do math, but that's more dogs dying than years this race has been run. Dogs die every year in this. It's very similar to horse racing, which looks very cute because they don't show the horses stumbling, breaking their necks, and getting shot on camera.
But the rationale is the same for both. The dogs love to run.
Yeah.
The dogs are born to run.
Yeah, they are.
The thoroughbreds are born to run.
They're born to run for about a year and a half, and then they usually die in a race or are retired. With various implications of what retired means. PETA Executive Vice President Tracy Ryman went on record with the following challenge. The Iditarod can count on losing more sponsors, and PETA is now urging Coca-Cola to do right by dogs and be the next one to flee. Iditarod CEO Stan Hooley said there's no doubt the decision is related to activists like PETA, wrongly implying the Iditarod condones cruel treatment of dogs, and it's just sort of happenstance that 150 have died.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say that last part, but...
yeah, they may not condone it. No one in their right mind will
condone it. These 150 dogs, they ran out into the middle of Alaska, into the snow, and accidentally died. It just spontaneously has happened over the years. Three of the deaths... And this year's Iditarod occurred during the race. Two other dogs died shortly after they finished racing. One was hit by a car in Anchorage, and another died from stress in an airplane cargo hold while en route. Both Iditarod and Wells Fargo declined to disclose the dollar amount of the bank's sponsorships, but it was significant enough for Wells Fargo to earn a spot on the sponsor banner that hangs under the start and finish lines, which sounds like they were paying quite a bit for this sponsorship.
I mean, this race gets a lot of coverage. I mean, I am in Chico, and I don't even like the snow that much, but I know about this race, and that's good publicity.
I mean, it's a horrible thing. It's not even tradition. This has not been going on that long. It's gone, you know, from this original... You know, 8 days or so to 20 days. And it's, you know, become sort of an extreme sport being driven by, you know, humans trying to hit time challenges.
Yeah, it's an extreme sport. It's a sport, you know, that values determination, lack of sleep, and forcing those values onto the dogs.
Right. And like a lot of these extreme sports, they're not traditions that the everyman has. You have to be rich to be involved in these things. You don't have a job. You have 15 or more dogs. You fly to Alaska. You feed 15 or more dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge amount of money involved in this.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of Native Alaskans who are not, and by Native Alaskans, I mean people born in Alaska, who participate in this race, I'd imagine. But yeah, I know there's some teams that come up from like Minnesota and Wisconsin. So,
yep.
Yeah. Anyway.
What's next, Jeannie?
What's next? Next, just to bring it back to home, we are in spring, soon to be summer. It's getting hot, although today's rain was kind of
Where did that rain come from? That was not in the forecast.
I don't know.
I woke up and everything was wet.
Chance of light showers, and they turned into like real showers. Anyway, it's springtime. And I wanted to talk about wildlife. And I wanted in particular to talk about, quote, nuisance animals and how many folks turn to trappers or companies that will trap nuisance skunks, raccoons, or opossums. And I want to say that trapping doesn't solve a nuisance animal problem. And this is from a little blog post from the group called Wild Care, which is a wildlife rehab and advocacy group out in Marin County. And they had a nice piece on this issue. Animals are attracted to your property because your property provides something they want and need. Usually what attracts them is access to food, water, or shelter. Therefore, if your property provides food, water, or shelter, wild animals will find it. If you hire a trapper to trap and remove an animal who has moved into a cozy den under your deck or one who eats your cat's leftover food, you are leaving an attractively open space for an easy food source on your property for another wild animal to come along. You can trap that animal too, but what about the next one after that? So, unless whatever is attracting the animal is removed, other animals will fill in the vacant space. That is just nature.
Nature, right? Abhors a vacuum.
Right. So if you have a great looking spot for a skunk to crawl into and have her babies, well, That's right? On you.
Yeah, I mean, if your kitchen is filthy and you have ants, you can spray all you want. The ants will come back.
Yeah. So, but if you hire a licensed trapper, and you have to be licensed to do this, to come out and trap a nuisance animal, legally, the trapper must release that animal within 100 yards of the capture site, or they must kill the animal. And this is what's key. These trappers are not legally required to tell you this. That's right. California law requires trappers to release a trapped animal essentially back onto your property or to euthanize the animal. So those are the only two choices they have. Sometimes trappers will try to hide this fact by telling clients that they will relocate the animal to some green and healthful spot. While this may sound like a good option, keep in mind that it is not legal for a trapper to relocate. So most likely he is lying to you because he doesn't want to get his license in jeopardy. And instead he or she will be killing the animal. And also keep in mind that relocation is actually incredibly cruel. In the vast majority of cases, relocation results in the death of the animal anyway. Imagine an animal removed from its den, its comfort zone, and all its known food and water sources. Imagine yourself being removed from your home and being put on maybe this Liberian island with the chimpanzees.
Dropped in the middle of the desert, but hey, you're free.
Imagine dropping that animal, confused and terrified, into another animal's territory because there's no open niches in the woods, right? What's likely to happen? The relocated animal will be beaten up and chased away from that territory and will eventually starve to death or die of exposure. In this situation, most wildlife will perish. Relocation of nuisance wildlife is never a good option to solve a wildlife problem. Also, according to the manager of birds at WildCare, the majority of the 20 baby scrub jays that they have in their care right now fell from their nests and were caught by cats. In fact, the majority of young birds WildCare takes in for care were caught by cats. Any baby bird that is still fluffy needs immediate warmth and care, and any animal caught by a cat needs medical attention and antibiotics. Yes, antibiotics are key because cat bites go toxic really quickly. WildCare also notes that bells do not work. Cats learn to walk without ringing them, and in any case, fledgling birds that cannot fly cannot escape, even if they hear the bell. So if you see a fledgling bird in your yard, please try to keep your cats indoors for a few days until the baby bird can learn how to fly. And they do learn how to fly pretty quickly. It's just a few days when they're really vulnerable. They're not good flyers, and they kind of flop around on the ground, and they look irresistible to cats. So even if you have an inside-outside cat, try to keep your cat inside for a few days if you notice one of these babies, particularly scrub jays. They tend to sit on the ground pretty quickly.
Yeah. And it's a tangent, but your pets live much longer if they're indoor only. They don't catch diseases. They don't get hit by cars. They don't disappear one day. And generally, indoor cats are going to be the best anyway.
I was reading the Portland Audubon Society teamed up with a feral cat group in Portland, and they created a campaign called Your Next Cat. So even if you have a cat that right now you cannot bring him indoors because he's just temperamentally and psychologically unable to come inside, the idea is to make a pledge that your next cat will be an indoors-only cat.
Right, and it's definitely something you start young if you can.
Yeah. So anyway, and another good tip is to go slow when you mow, because that will give snakes, lizards, rabbits, and all those small little rodents and other critters a chance to get away from your blades of glory on your... Did you catch that reference?
A little bit.
Okay. Anyway, for those who don't know that, I'm just going to hit it with the humor hammer. That was a reference to the Will Ferrell figure skating movie that was titled Blades of Glory. So, anyway. In Chico, you can call the Bidwell Wildlife Rehab Group at 530-343-9004. I'll post these notes to the Facebook page. And listen to their hotline to get connected to a qualified local rehabber in Red Bluff, Cottonwood, and other areas of Tehama County. They have a great group called Tehama Wildcare, and they're on Facebook. And also the Shasta Wildlife Rescue will help you out in the Anderson, Redding area. And all those groups have Facebook pages. But Bidwell Wildlife Rehab does not have a Facebook page.
Yeah, so. I can't give higher praise to wildlife rehabbers. I mean, it's just sort of selfless, dedicated people. And myself, I have not had birds, but I've had several baby squirrels that fall out of trees that hopefully have been appropriately rehomed, working through these guys, and they're always very helpful. There's never a, you know, no, go away.
Yeah.
They're generally, they can guide you with the right thing to do.
So anyway, so yeah, in these next couple of weeks, keep an eye on your cats and kind of keep them more inside than outside if you can, because there's a lot of baby birds. And also realize that baby birds or birds will go through maybe two cycles of nesting. So they may finish with this brood, but once this brood leaves the nest, they may start another nest. So middle of summer, you probably want to keep an eye out too. So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
And now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get ready to mark your papers, your iPhones, your iPads, your Androids, your old Windows 95 computers. However you do it, take some notes.
Okay. We're finally here. It's finally June, and I want to encourage folks to check out this weekend. Saturday, June 3rd, is the Nevada City Vegan Food and Wine Festival from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Odd Fellows Lounge. And they have a bunch of events. They're having book signings, of course, wine tastings, the pop-up food vendors with vegan food options. It should be a lot of fun. Are you going?
I don't know. Okay. I'd like to go. I forgot it was so soon.
Yeah. This is May 31st, so yeah. June is tomorrow. From June 2nd through the 4th is the Farmed Animal Conference at Animal Place. Also in Grass Valley, and I highly recommend attending that. They'll be having some really great speakers. Carol J. Adams, the author of The Sexual Politics of Meat, will be speaking. There'll be a talk on race, class, and veganism. Another talk on animals, migrants, and structural violence in the factory farming industry. And also Patrice Jones from the Vine Sanctuary will be giving a talk on intersectionality and liberation for all, including humans and including non-human animals. And you can check out information on that at farmedanimalconference.org. And for the Nevada City Vegan Food and Wine Festival, you can check out their Facebook events. Coming up next Tuesday, June 6th, is the California Humane Lobby Day. That's put on by the Humane Society of the United States. And if you are an animal advocate and you want to give lobbying a try, if you want to try giving a 1-minute elevator speech to your elected representative, this is the place to go. Sign up for this at humanesociety.org and look up Lobby Day and look up the California section. And they will arrange appointments with legislators for you to give your pitch. So, also, this Saturday, June 4th, is the Prithirang Sanctuary 4th Anniversary Vegan Potluck. And they're located in Dixon, so a little bit of a drive, but they're a nice small sanctuary, and their potluck will be from 11 to 2 p.m. And you can register at Prithirang Sanctuary. That's Prethirang sanctuary.org. They are just a really nice group of animal advocates. So that is about it. If you have an event or other news to share, send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. And also, if you go to the Non-Human Radio Facebook page and check out the events, I've shared to that events page all the regional animal-friendly events that I can find, all these veg fest as well as other events. So check it out. So we have one last bit of business to take care of. That's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
The Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from Dr. Paul Farmer, American anthropologist, physician, and co-founder of an international social justice and health organization, Partners in Health. Farmer wrote, "The idea that some lives matter less is the root of all that is wrong with the world." Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. I'm looking at you now. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of the show or you want to listen over and over again, you can find our show at kzfr.org. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Thomas.